ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, fans of all ages, it's your favorite time of the week. You might need to brace yourself and grab a cold beverage. Mark and Scott are ready to drop some college football betting knowledge on your ass. The boys are back and ready to help you find some angles to beat your book, impress your friends, and get you ready to enjoy the greatest sport on the planet. So sit back and enjoy, because we're damn happy to have you. Welcome to the Crazy Sheet.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Mark, and I'm here in my office, believe it or not, as we record this on Thursday morning, January the 5th, as we are just days away from two national championships. One will be held in Frisco, Texas, and the other one will be in the Wood, Englewood, California, next Monday. Scotty, brother, how the hell are you?
Man, I'm good. Just, just hanging out. Just, getting ready for trying to recover from New Year's. Those games this week were wild. I mean, that was as much fun those last, because there were some great games. I mean, like that SC Tulane game.
Oh my God,
was a great game. Look, there wasn't a whole lot of scoring, but that was an exciting, especially fourth quarter Mississippi State Illinois game. There were some, and then obviously Georgia and Michigan's games were just, both those games, Michigan TCU and Georgia Ohio State were just incredible. So, that was just a great weekend of college football. And then the wildest thing, of course, that NFL deal with the kid having the heart stop on the field. I mean, just a scary deal at NFL. I mean, that whole 72 hours of football was just wild. I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah, there was some great games. I had a couple of things, just takeaways. I'm sure by now we're 5 days removed from some of these games. Hopefully everybody's had a chance to recap them and go from there. So I'm just going to bullet some questions at you. Give me your responses. We haven't gone through and talked about this. Number one, if you're Lincoln Riley, what's your opinion on what you've got to do from a defensive sense? But this defensive showing that USC gave us this season is very reminiscent to what we saw at the University of Oklahoma. And if you're going to take the next step, don't you have to make a decision that you've got to do something to improve the defense? Because I don't see how they can compete as a top four team in the country with defenses that we've seen Riley put on the field for the last 3 years.
No doubt about it. Look, let's not forget that at home, K-State only gave up, 23 to Tulane? Now, Tulane won that ball game. Wasn't that game 23-7?
Something like that.
I think that's right. So, anyway, certainly not giving up 40. USC can't keep giving up 40 and 50 every week.
17-10 was the
17-10, okay. So, I knew it was a low-scoring ball game. That is a – look, Tulane's best part of that team was defense. Yeah. I mean, their offense, look, is good, and I don't mean to take shot, but it is not the strength of that team. And that's not what won them their conference, let me say it like that. And you have to – he's got to make a change at defense coordinator, doesn't he? It doesn't look like he's going to.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, we're 5 days out. They hadn't been worth a damn in forever.
No.
And I just don't understand. I don't know how you don't go hire a new defense coordinator.
I don't either. I think definitely you've got to figure something out, because it's not like you can't get the talent. I mean, USC can cherry pick the talent through there. And I think they're going to have to get better quick, because they're moving into the Big Ten. And so it's not like they're going to be matched up with some of these middling Pac-12 teams that they've had the privilege to get to play over the years. They're about to head into a conference that has got some really good defensive talent in it, and historically good defensive talent that they're going to match up against. And so
– and pounds you physically.
Yeah, it's going to be a more physical game for them too.
Yeah. Look, and we've already talked about this. When you combine how big of a change it's going to be from the playing styles And then I'm telling you, at some point every season, they're going to have to play back-to-back road games. That second game's probably going to be a loss unless they get lucky and it's Rutgers or, you know, somebody at the bottom of the conference. But, I mean, if they get caught playing a Nebraska, Wisconsin, you know, Michigan State that second weekend after they played a Michigan or a Michigan State and a Michigan or an Ohio State,
right?
Or a Penn State, and they're both those games are on the road, they're going to lose to a team they probably beat. They have to fix the defensive side of the football. They have to. And I just, man, it doesn't look like they're going to do it. And, you know, the one thing I will say about the recruiting end, they're going to get talent. SC's always going to be able to get talent. It's a marquee brand. State of California, you can go look at it, is not putting out the high-end defensive line guy like they have done in years past. Most of those guys are in the Southeast. And I just think SC's going to have a hard time getting that guy. And, you know, there's so many schools that will, you know, pay big money to keep them close. And I think SC has got to figure out something schematically that's going to give them the opportunity to compete for a national championship on the defensive side of football. Riley's going to scheme well enough to do it offensively, and he's certainly going to be able to get the talent at SC to do it. I think they've got to do something defensively. I don't even think this is a question, but evidently we're the only two asking it. Nobody that matters is asking it.
Next question I got for you. Alabama rolled K-State. It was obvious after they kind of got out there, they were there to play. All the guys came back. Anderson was back. Young was back. Jamar Gibbs. I didn't think Gibbs was going to play.
I didn't think Gibbs was playing.
I didn't think he was either. And they beat the dog out of Kansas State. Just pounded him. I mean, they went out there, put an Alabama ass-whooping down on there. Looking way too ahead right now, are we thinking – I mean, Nick Saban makes one more run at this thing next year, and he may ride off into the sunset. Does he play out the string of his contract? Because I think Alabama's going to have a lot of questions to answer next year as well. I think everything's getting tighter, but obviously they figured out the NIL stuff, that they're coming back around. And so how many more years do you think we get out of Nick Saban at this point?
I don't think it's many more. I really don't, for a lot of reasons, but – I'm fascinated to see who he hires as offense coordinator, because it ain't going to be Bill O'Brien.
Has he fired Bill O'Brien yet? Because he's terrible.
No, but it ain't going to be Bill O'Brien. So I'm fascinated to see. I have always felt like there was a high chance that Mullen was going to end up there. I still think that.
Interesting.
But I think that determines which of those quarterbacks wins the job, because Simpson – is a coach's kid, was a five-star kid. And then they got the kid who's second team this year, I can't remember his name, that played when Young was hurt. So that's going to be fascinating, because they're two totally different players. One's a fast run, speed guy. Another guy is more of a traditional, you know, dual threat kind of quarterback guy, but has got a better arm. So obviously being a coach's kid. So I think wherever the offensive coordinator goes – is where they go on the offensive side of the football with a quarterback. So I'm fascinated to see that. I do think he wins one more natty, and I think he's gone. But I will tell you, I think the grip he's had on the Southeastern Conference is certainly slipping, because Kelly's the best coach that's been in the Western Division since he took over. And he's at a great school that can truly, legitimately win a national title, and he beat him this year.
Right.
This is the first time he didn't have equal talent. This is the first time he's had comparable talent in all those games that he's played Saban.
Yeah.
You know, Saban beat the hell out of him a couple of times, but it's just because they were significantly more talented.
Absolutely.
I mean, that year they played them, there weren't three people in the country with that Manti Te'o team that could have gotten Notre Dame to the natty, period, that year.
Right.
You know, but he did. I think that's a huge challenge. Obviously, Kirby's got it rolling down there. So I think there's some different. I think Tennessee is better than they've been, and I think that coach is going to be able to do some things schematically that are going to give them some challenges. And then you've got the rest of the league is, look, Freeze is going to do a good job on the Plains. And so that is the best coach they've had on the Plains in a long time, too. And so I think that changed. And then you still got, you know, Arkansas's good. State's good. Ole Miss is good. They're, all of them are in good positions. And then A&M's A&M. I mean, they're honestly still a sleeping giant. But they're going to be talented. They're going to play well against Bama because he's going to scheme it up. And then, you know, the East is still the East, minus Georgia and Tennessee. I do think South Carolina looks like they're stepping up. But, boy, how big of a mess is the SEC East right now. Look at that bowl record. Just atrocious. I will tell you, I've always been a believer that bowls did show kind of where conferences are. That's out the damn window with the transfer portal.
I agree.
I mean, I mean, Florida wasn't remote. That wasn't remotely the same team that played football all fall.
No,
I didn't even recognize half the people that were on the field for them.
Yeah, I agree. I was.
You know, Missouri doesn't have their quarterback. Yeah. I mean, and they were still in that ball game. I mean, hell, they got like 8-10 guys in the portal that started. I mean, they had a bunch of guys bail, and. You know, it's just not the same. These teams just aren't remotely the same. What's Kentucky look like with Levis and both running backs? I mean, that's a totally different football team. Every player that's competent offensively wasn't on the field for Kentucky. You know, so, I mean, it's just a different deal. I told you I would have bet that game if it got under 30 on the under, and I still would have. That game had no chance of going over 30.
You can't tell me when you saw 21 in the first half, you weren't like, uh-oh. Because I was, too. And I was like, well, and the other thing, too, Iowa's offense in the first half was like something I haven't seen from them all season long. I mean, they came out. It was so funny. You could tell they had scripted the first 20 plays or so because there was a lot of motion, misdirection, tight end was involved. I mean, ESPN couldn't get the graphic up fast enough about how incredible the tight ends are that had played for Iowa over the years and things like that. And then the next thing you know, it's like they get 21 points and it was just shut that motherfucker down. It's like, and you know, a backup quarterback at Kentucky against an Iowa defense is not going to, I mean, from a scheme perspective, is not going to have seen anything like they were throwing at that guy. You've got two NFL cornerbacks on that team. You've got a defensive edge rusher and a lineman that are both going to play in the league. And so that was an easy bet. I was big on Penn State. I thought they showed out. Talking about sleeping giants, and I'm kind of already looking a little bit ahead to next year because we're going to try to do a better job of podcasting more in the off season as things go. I was big on Penn State in that one. And after Cam Rising got hurt, it was obvious that there was a giant gap in talent between Cam Rising and the backup that had played in there. But James Franklin, man, at Penn State, we don't talk about him much, and I'm not even a giant fan, but you hit a nail on the head. I mean, he's done a pretty good job at Penn State, and you kind of wonder, is he at the top that he can carry that program, or are they that close to tipping it over and maybe we're just not seeing it yet?
I think they're close. Let me tell you something. You got two freshman backs like they got. And, buddy, you're close to tipping over the top.
Yeah,
I mean, they can play. Because, look, they still have not had an explosive. They got to improve the quarterback position. They've got to get an explosive. Trace McSorley is by far the most explosive quarterback they've had. And, candidly, as a top 10 program in America traditionally, because that really is where Penn State's probably a top 10, top 12 traditionally program. They just have not had good quarterback play. And it's not that's poor way of saying it. They had good quarterback play. They haven't had upper-end talent. Right. Let me say it like that. Because obviously they got good quarterback play as a whole this year. But you see it exposed when they play a Michigan and a – I mean, his team won 10 games. Well, I guess 11 games, actually. But got smoked twice. I mean, they got drilled twice.
Yeah.
You know, by the two best teams in that division – they got drilled. So are they close? Are they not? I think they've got to have better quarterback play to get there. To me right now, that's where I see the biggest difference being. I still think they play pretty good defense. I do think they have got to improve the high-end ability against top-end teams at quarterback to take that next step. But I can't, and I'm going to fumble this, that it's either the fourth or fifth time in like the last 8 years he's won 10 games. We had losing seasons in there too. You know, I mean, during the COVID year, they were under 500, I think. You know, I mean, it's a, they kind of are a misnomer. And obviously they got a, you know, a quarterback who's been playing for 980 years is leaving. And so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, where that team is. But when you got freshman backs like that, boy, that's something else. I mean, they're talented. And it does not feel like that he's ever gotten the recruiting on track the way he did. I mean, honestly, hell, is some of his recruiting, you know, at Vanderbilt was as good as it's been a couple of the years at Penn State, and that's unacceptable. So, you know, but at the same time, you look at their roster and how talented they are, and they are talented. They're putting great players in the NFL. So, I mean, you got guys like Micah Parsons coming out of there too. So, I think he is significantly closer to pushing it over the top. It is much like golf handicaps. It's harder to – the hardest is not breaking – going from 90 to 80. It's going from 75 to 72. You know, that's really hard. Same thing. It's real damn hard to go from 10 wins to 12. But it ain't real hard to go from 6 to 10. It's significantly easier to go from 6 to 10 than it is from 10 to 12. And I think that's the situation James Franklin's in. I think he is very close.
That's interesting. Next one I got for you. So you nailed it on the head. It took a bit to get there, but Texas A&M did end up with the most kids hitting the transfer portal. You can talk about how valuable they were, stats, starts, whatever it may be. I think they had 27 kids. It may have gone up and that hit the portal. And that's kind of where college football is now, is you've got to re-recruit your whole roster every year. The better you are, the more talent you got. Those kids don't get to play. They're going to go. And so I'm not going to throw any shade on my man Jimbo. We did enough of that during the season. But Bobby Petrino, Jimbo Fisher, same coaching staff, how's that going to work? What you're looking at it from 7 months out, when we turn on the TV week one to watch Texas A&M play, are we going to see him calling Jimbo's offense? Are we going to see Petrino's offense? You think we're going to see a hybrid that works, doesn't work? What's your just looking out opinion at this point in time? Because they've got a good quarterback in Connor Wegman, and they've got
talent. There is no damn way that he and Bobby Petrino are not going to get in some full-on just cussing matches. Now, we may not see them, but there is no chance it's not going to happen. I think Petrino's a great offensive coach. And I think he is equally as big of a douchebag as I think Jimbo is. That is really hard to comprehend, both those guys being in the same room. Fascinating. Between those guys and Jimbo, if he gives it to Petrino, I think this is where the real problems arise. If he really does step back and say, we're going to let Bobby run it, let's give him the deal, and that offense comes out and it's wide ass open and they're scoring 45, ego starts to come in. Ego gets in the way. And that is it. Then he feels slighted, embarrassed, you know, all of that. And I think that could be a major problem. I find it really hard to believe that he's going to turn it totally over to him. And I think at some point that leads to Petrino throwing his hands up. And every time I get ready to try to do something, I get overruled because he's standing on the damn sideline, you know. And because Petrino used to work from the box, you know. So it's going to be interesting. You see Jimbo still with that headset on and carrying, toting around a play sheet, and this is not going well. That is the bottom line. I mean, that is the bottom line. I cannot imagine that this ends well. But it's a great hire if you'll get out of the way and let him coach. I mean, look, there's some rumor. Seth Luttrell may end up down there with him. You know, because I know State has been talking to him, and he's just kind of drug his feet. Sure. on taking a job and all of that. And, you know, so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that, all shakes out. That there'd be a lot of offensive talent down there, especially if Latrell goes down there. So there's no excuse for him to not be good. I want to hear what A&M fans have to say if he goes 8-4 again. Because it certainly is not going to be coaching staff. I mean, DJ Durkin, defense coordinator, you know I liked him as a head coach. I think Durkin's a good defense coordinator. Now you got Petrino. Now you got Jimbo. You're throwing everything but the kitchen sink at it.
Oh, yeah.
At some point, it's going to be time to move on.
No, I would agree. It's going to be interesting. So, I mean, that's one of the storylines I'm looking forward to. There's a lot I'm looking forward to going into next year. I mean, I know we've got two games left. The FCS game, which we'll get to here in a minute, and then the Natty, the big one.
Mark, let's roll on to Ole Miss. I know we got some Ole Miss guys that listen. I think they're fascinating for next year.
I do too.
Because they ended with an utter thud.
Yeah, but I wasn't expecting much from Ole Miss in that game. We were at that game, and you had two completely different vibes in the sense where Texas Tech came in here, and even though Texas Tech went to a bowl game last year, you got to remember they had fired their head coach. They had the interim that came in, so you get Joey McGuire coming in here at Texas Tech. He's, you know, I'm West Texas. You're going to run everything through Lubbock. Gets two huge wins for this program. He beat Texas and he beat Oklahoma, gets bowl eligible. There were Tech fans everywhere at that game, and I think they could just kind of feel it. Ole Miss, you didn't hear much about it. You heard more about the situation with Leach, the words that Lane Kiffin spoke, and the way he put things out there in the media, which I thought was a pure sign of character from him, and the way he handled himself. But I saw him more on the recruiting trail than I did anything else. And I think it was, hey, we're going to go out, run our offense, and spin it a little bit. I think he knows Jackson Dart isn't the answer.
I don't even think it was that. Well, that's where I was going. Yeah. I wasn't even talking about bowl game. I'm talking about losing 4 out of 5.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think Kiffin kind of looked at the end of the season because they came out hot, and then you realize when you looked at their record, they were fugazi. And that's why we started betting unders on them because defensively they weren't bad, but offensively they weren't very explosive. And so he's got Judkins coming back. I don't know if Evans has come back. Bennett's going to graduate. But the core of that team is not bad. And I'm interested to see how it's going to evolve because I personally think we're 2 to 3 years away from Lane Kiffin being the guy that Alabama wants to bring in as the head coach. But I think he's also got to have a good showing while at Ole Miss. You can't roll out some 6-6s and think you're going to step into that job regardless of what your name is there. And so I do think they have to improve. I think the SEC with Texas and Oklahoma moving over, if they do move over for next year, is going to be fascinating because there's so many teams that are getting better. And the only teams I would tell you that I really have a big question mark about going into next year would be, you know, Vanderbilt, Mizzou, not that fired up. I've got to assume Florida's going to be better. You've got to assume Texas A&M's going to be better.
I think Arkansas is a gigantic question mark.
That's they're probably the
having to turn one. Over that whole roster. Yeah. They're going to be fascinating.
And so, you know, there's a lot
I think Kiffin's really interesting because it is – look, he clearly wants out of Oxford. And now, was it that he wants out because, you know, Auburn really – because Auburn is a better job. But A&M – look, man, I believe A&M's open next year. That's my honest opinion. That A&M job's going to be better. He's got to win to stay. He clearly is not much of a Jackson Dart fan or thinks he's got to get significantly better. It's going to be fascinating to see where those guys end up. They missed on a big – they were really trying to get Ry Thomas, State's guy, the wide receiver, out of the portal. He chose Georgia. You know, that's – you've now seen a flip from a wide receiver to A&M from Georgia. Well, that's not really a flip. They let him go because they signed Ry Thomas, who they know can play the spot, is immediate help. It's a different – man, recruiting and portal are so different now. And I'm fascinated to see where Ole Miss comes in because he's a portal guy, and you're going to have some hits. It's like JUCO recruiting, for lack of a better word. You just got to – you're going to have some hits and misses. I think Ole Miss is fascinating. And the way they ended, their fan base is a little frustrated. The bowl game on it, because honestly, especially when you have guys, Ole Miss had a lot of guys in the portal, got some guys, you know, going to go pro. Don't bowl games honestly are not the judge they used to be. That's the reason it's so hard to gamble, you know, and so that really isn't it. But when you combine the way they played that bowl game and then his clear frustration, essentially accusing A&M of race, I mean, of Tech, of racial slurs, them coming out just slamming the door on it, that is, to me, shows a little bit of frustration with where they were. And I'm going to be fascinated to see where those guys come out next year. Because, again, he's going to, I guarantee you, the preseason top 25. You got Judkins, you got Dart. It'll surprise me if they're not preseason top 25. But will those guys be as fugazi next year as they were this year? Because the schedule was so soft early, but it ended in a really, really tough manner. So I'm fascinated to see. I think Ole Miss is going to be one of the most interesting teams to preview next year to find out where they are. And I think A&M will be right there with them.
All right, Scott, we've thrown it all over the map. I can't imagine any other college football podcast is it just wandered around the way we just did to get this one started. We got two games. We got the Big Natty on Monday night, and we got the FCS Natty, which from a programming perspective, what a terrible time. This is being played about a mile and a half from your house in Frisco, but they're playing it Sunday afternoon, which why you stack it against all of the – NFL games that'll be going on. It's going to lose ratings, and which is sad because this is a great game. It's a huge rivalry between North Dakota State and South Dakota, the Jackrabbits and the Bison. And I've actually got a play on this game, and so I'm on with this. Which one do you want to go to first? You want to go to the big show or you want to go to the little show?
You know what? I want to go big show first. All right. Let's go big show.
Game we got Monday night will be played in SoFi Stadium, TCU against Georgia in this one. Opening line opened up at 13.5. You saw it pop to some 14s in some places and get even above that. It's obviously taking some money coming back the other way, as this game is now down to Georgia minus 12.5, pretty much painted across the board. Over-under number here, 64 is the opening. You've got numbers ranging all the way from 62 back up to 63.5. So depending on what books that you've got. If you look at these two teams, both of them got into this game in an exciting way. Georgia slipped by Ohio State as that kid shanked that field goal there at the end to miss that one. TCU pulled a gigantic upset against Michigan in this one, and you got to wonder how much purple pixie dust is left in Fort Worth, and are they going to be able to move it out to the left coast once again? What are your thoughts? How are you going to play this game? Do you have any derivative bets? Where are you going to go from this perspective?
Well, my ass ain't betting against TCU in the spread again. I have been as wrong on these dudes all year as I have anybody, and I really thought it's finally going to – and I'm watching that game. And right off the get-go, Michigan runs the damn double Philly down on the goal line on four. That's just one of the dumbest play calls I've ever seen for a power football team.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, this is stupid. I was like, there's no way they're going to cover doing dumb shit like this. And then they throw two pick sixes. And then they get a huge play down at the goal line, and oh, let's fumble on the 1 yard line, and they recover it for a touchback. They don't. Not only do they fumble at the 1 yard line, and TCU gets pinned inside the five. Oh no! Let's fumble it into the end zone, so they get started at the 20. It was completely a mess. All I know is this team keeps finding ways to either get it done or keep it close.
Yeah.
And I think Georgia is the most talented team they've played. I think, you know, I mean, obviously with the point spread that was basically two touchdowns when it opened is a huge number. I think Washington being hurt is a big deal. I am going to play TCU plus the points, but you and I have talked about this a little bit pre. I think the over may be the right play. I think 63.5, I will have over money on that. Yes, that's a lot of scoring. I mean, that basically means somebody's got to score 40. You know, but can you honestly tell me you can't see this ball game being 41-31, you know, and TCU being in the ball game, but Georgia never not being in doubt of winning the game? I certainly can. You know, I think if this game's a blowout, I think Georgia keeps their foot on the gas, unlike what they did with Tennessee, because this team is explosive and this team is fast. And, you know, that is the one thing. And this is an old football team. I think what I've misgauged about TCU all year is the experience factor and how that's playing into this. You know, Dyke's making a big deal about how few guys have played in bowl games and all that. Like, damn. These guys have played a lot of snaps. You know, some of them are, you know, they got an important player from Navy who's come in. Like, you know, they've got some guys that are, you know, fifth and sixth year guys that are playing on this football. I mean, Duggan, I mean, this is year five for him, I think, but he's been what seems like, but he's been playing for 5 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it is, I mean, these guys have just played a lot of snaps, and a lot of them have played a lot of snaps together. And they're guys that continue to just grow and maximize their ability. Those wide receivers are explosive, but they're all older guys who've grown up and grown into a system. And I just, you know, at the end of the day, I think experience does matter. I think these guys are older, and I think they're going to be able to keep it close enough with Georgia, but I think Georgia wins a game.
I like the total in this one. I'm going over here. And here's the thing that I think you're going to see, and I could be dead ass wrong on this, but the only matchup that I know of this season, and I could be wrong, feel free to correct me, is the one of the matchups that we saw this season where, you know, Gillespie, the defensive coordinator at TCU, runs a 3-3-5. He's ran it at Tulsa. It's done really well. It's the best defense to run in the Big 12. And it's quickly becoming a bigger defense to run nationally as more teams are throwing the rock around this season. Probably the best 3-3-5 defense that Georgia played all season long is going to be Mississippi State. And they scored 45 points in this game. So a couple of things. If Washington is out, I think that's a big deal. I think we'll see Oscar Delp. And because the Eric Gilbert is in the portals, I don't even think he's on the roster at this point in time. And so we will see Delp. If Washington can move, he's going to play. He's a difference maker. Even if you just have to use him in some different formations that are out there, but he's a complete difference maker for this team. But here's a couple of things that I'll point out to you is in the total, Georgia knows they're going to have to score some points. This isn't going to be a lockdown game where they're going to be able to just go out and score 28 points and win this one. So I think they realize they're going to have to put some points on the board. I think they'll be schemed for this. Against a 3-3-5, they've got to look. They've seen it before. I think they'll be comfortable in this. Bennett's been around a lot. He's been in these big games. And so I anticipate they're going to get some points on this one. On the flip side, I think TCU, I mean, wide receiver one going into the draft is going to be Quentin Johnson from TCU. The kid's a freak. He's 6'4", 275, and he can make some plays. Now, a couple of things when you start looking at the quarterback play for Max Duggan, there were some balls in that Michigan game that he left out there that could have gone the other way. There were some errant throws that they could not capitalize on. Now, there were some big plays like the Quentin Johnson, the 75-yard touchdown where he comes across the middle, stutter steps. That wasn't a play, a quarterback play. That was a scheme play is what happened. They caught them in a bad situation. The wide receiver makes one move in open field, and he was gone. And there's tremendous team speed with this TCU football team, and so I do think we're going to see him exploit that. I'm going over in this game. I'm betting over on the total. I'm betting over in the first half. I think it's going to be a lot of points. Georgia's defense has shown on the back end, which is the weakness of this team all year long, but nobody's really been able to exploit it. We thought Tennessee would be able to, and Tennessee couldn't because the offensive line just shuddered in that particular game. And I think the rain played problems with Tennessee in that one too. The stage was too big for Tennessee. And to win that game on the road, and they just didn't look great. They had some shots. They just couldn't get it done. But in the game against LSU, when they played in perfect conditions, LSU scored 30 points. And you can say whatever you want to in that one, but that was with a backup quarterback in the SEC championship game. And I realized Georgia didn't have to win that game and they would still probably gone. But giving up 30 points is a big deal. And then Ohio State showed that they could get it done. And they had some injuries in their wide receiver core. You know, Harrison got hurt and Jigba didn't even play. And so there was some good scheme there. I think this is going to be a shootout. I look for the final score in this one to be 42-28. Georgia covers the over wins the game, wins the natty, and goes from there. I may still sprinkle something on the TCU money line because it's at 4.5 to 1, just to see if I can catch the ticket. But that's where I'm going with this one.
I think the over is the best play. I think two things. Kirby's defenses have always wanted to give you that inside. The key in this ball game and TCU's ability to score is going to be how well they can protect the quarterback against that front of Georgia. Ohio State did an outstanding job, yeah, which forced Georgia to send backers and send press, which was opening up the middle of the field, which by all their coverages and stances is where they want to give you, except down on the goal line. They want to give you that because generally there's a big, tall, athletic linebacker standing 10 yards down the field, and it's a small window to throw. And if you don't make a great throw, it's a pick because you got a safety over the top and it goes right into his hands. It's not complicated what Kirby's trying to do, but if they can protect and make Georgia send more linebackers, it's going to open up all those slants. And I can assure you, this offensive staff at TCU saw it. They think they're going to be able to do it because this is a good wide receiver core too.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to attack that side of that part of the field as well. So I think this is just I think this is going to be interesting. The key for this game being a lock as an over is how well that offensive line can protect that versus that front of Georgia. All right. Georgia's going to be able to create pressure because if they'll send guys as they showed the other night. But that changes the defense, and that lets a good offensive staff like TCU has with an experienced quarterback open up a lot of lanes on those shorter routes and give their guys the ability to make something happen. But really, all you got to do is move the chains, keep getting first downs. And I think the flip is I think Georgia's going to score points because I just think this offense is just such a nightmare matchup. And I am fascinated to see how Bennett responds. Kirby really thought he played like hell. And I would agree with Kirby Smart. I didn't think he played very well either. But, I mean, you don't take it on yourself to say everything he was saying post-game, talking to him post-game. I mean, he called it out. He's got to play better if we're going to win next week. You know, I mean, he basically, I haven't even looked at TCU, but I know we got to play better if we're going to win. You know, and man, he was laying a lot of that on Stetson Bennett. I'm fascinated to see how that kid responds. And I expect him to respond well, and I expect him to play good. At the end of the day, I also think this TCU defense doesn't have the hosses that Ohio State defense does. Because, look, they're still really talented. But at the end of the day, I think the key is how well that offensive line protects. This game goes over for sure if they can stop that Georgia front four from getting to the quarterback. And that makes them create pressure with backers, and if it does that, that's a difference in the ball game. I think it'll definitely go over, and I think it'll also give TCU an opportunity to possibly win this game. I think Georgia's going to win, but TCU has been so close. I don't know that I can bet on Georgia and the number. I will put something on TCU and the number, but I think the over is what my main play is going to be.
I like it. All right, Scotty, let's look at this other game real quick, the FCS Championship. We won't do this big of a deep dive into it because I don't got all the data. But anyway, South Dakota State, North Dakota State will be playing in this game. Interesting matchup, huge rivalry for these two teams. South Dakota State has beaten North Dakota State 3 out of the last 4 times that they've played. If you get a chance on Sunday, flip this game on a side TV, throw it on your laptop, it'll be great. I guarantee it's going to be sold out. If you're in Frisco, Texas right now, start looking because you're going to see a herd of green and gold that's rolling in for this one. You've got the last two national champions that have played in the actual football season. There was that one season when Sam won it when they played in the spring. We'll be matched up in this one here. This is pretty exciting. North Dakota State comes in with the best fullback in the country. If you haven't seen this kid, number 44, he's a hoss. He gets it done. Interesting game for me. I'm going contrarian in this one. I think a lot of people are going to want to bet the under in this one. I'm going back to the over at 47.5. I think it's got some value. I think both these teams are very familiar with each other, but I think from a scheme perspective, they're going to be able to put some points up. I'm going over 47.5, and if North Dakota State gets to a +6, I will probably get some North Dakota State +6, and I might even put a little teaser, which I would never tell anybody to do in college, but a teaser of North Dakota State in the points and tease that number down and go over that and get me, so I would give, you know, get under a key number at 41.5 and then bump up the total to 11.5 in that spot, and I would take North Dakota State in this one. So interesting bet split. South Dakota State is getting 48% of the bets, but 67% of the money as far as DraftKings is concerned. About 70% of the money is on the over. And then if you're looking to bet this one straight up, then you've got South Dakota State at -210 is getting 70% of the handle, 70% of the money on this one.
Wow. I think it's hard to bet against North Dakota State. I mean, they just keep coming here with different quarterbacks and different players and different coaches. And it's just, I mean, they just are always here. But at some point, somebody's going to break this spell. And so I'm gonna roll with it, but I will take them and the number because I think they cover. I think it's a close ball game.
So you're going North Dakota State +5.5 here?
Yep, +5.5.
Interesting. Cool. Scotty, that is a wrap on college football season. As y'all go out this weekend, make some bets, hit us up on Twitter. We will probably come back to you in another month or so as we get reorganized after the final signing day has already been put to bed. Spring's going to start, and we'll probably start seeing some we'll start seeing some total numbers that'll pop a little bit, so we'll start looking into those things. Scotty, it's been a fun season. Bowl games were tricky, but we got through it, and I am looking forward to what we've got in front of us next year.
I want to try to post-spring do a transfer portal recap. All the people that have hit it after spring, because everybody forgets, spring's another time when everybody bails.
Oh, yeah.
And as you start looking at rosters and things like that, you're going to have kids come out and you're going to think, oh, this team's got depth at this spot, and boom, the backup's in the portal. All of a sudden, they don't have any depth. And, Mississippi State's had a deep QB room. Now it's Will Rogers. Everybody else is in the portal.
Yeah.
It's because, Rogers technically has two more years at State. State's got a really highly ranked dual threat kind of QB coming in. So I think a lot of those guys are like, man, we're not going to play, and this guy's the future. And I think they're hitting the road. But, man, if State, Will Rogers goes down, they got to go find a backup portal QB. Are they going to be playing a true freshman next year? I'm stunned that all three of those kids didn't stick around. How in the world do you leave, with a freshman coming in and not try to win the job, because those kids were freshmen. So it's just interesting, again, the lack of put your head down and go to work. You got to start as a sophomore. There's a reason you're not starting right now. You're probably not ready. Put your head down and go to work. Learn the defense, be able to throw the football. It's just interesting. I mean, I'm sorry, Robertson is the kid I'm speaking of specifically at State. There's a reason why you were third team. You're significantly more talented than the fifth-year senior transfer they brought in from South Alabama. You weren't ready. Get ready. Don't transfer. But, hey, the kid's from Texas. I'm sure he's going to get an opportunity in the state of Texas. He's got a big arm. So, good for him. But it's just the transfer portal, man. So I want to take a look in May after all these spring games are gone. Where's the portal then? Because that's going to be another gigantic time. You'll have guys from Alabama that think they're going to go fight in spring for the job, and when they don't win it, boom, they're gone. And where do they end up? Mark Spanks ran it back, got the cover for Mississippi State in the bowl game, was that guy at Alabama last year. Thought he'd win the job, didn't win the defensive back job, and fails, and now he's going to be a starter next year at State. So that's what can happen. So I can't wait to see that too. So that's a potential off-season podcast as well.
Scott, it's been fun, brother. Let's try to make a few bucks on our way out the door for college football season, and then we can wrangle up maybe some NFL playoffs. Who knows? I've got a ton of money out there this week in the NFL. It's going to be a wild Sunday with everything.
Wow.
I mean, you got a lot of games that still have to fall into place. You've got some games that may not have any meeting. I've got a mess going on for that, so we may bring it back. If you got anything you want to hear about, send us a note, folks. As always, we enjoy the feedback. We enjoy the reviews. They're always a gift, and we'll talk to you soon.